The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So the war in Ukraine is very much on my mind, and it seems that one of the interesting or important topics is how does our Buddhist practice relate to such international events that have such a big impact on all of us, and many of us are trying to figure out how to relate to it and live in a world that both is unfolding in front of our eyes, a new world, a new whole kind of maybe era in human history that people will write about and for centuries to come, and we're living it. And how do we live in this change, and how do we relate to it? So I want to begin by to go back to the time of the Buddha, that the Buddha was sometimes referred to as a teacher of action. The Pali word is kamma-vādin. And so of all the different ways that he could be represented as, you know, his stance, his approach, there were times when he was called a teacher of action. And why is that? And what's so important about action? His teachings and associated with action as being so important. And I would like to say that probably action is one of the core aspects of what the Buddha had to teach. And so to understand why action is so important, and why I think is to understand the essence of the Buddhist practice and how we practice it. And given the war in the Ukraine and given this emphasis on action, I want to tell a little story that from the 1950s that has kind of circled around Western Dharma circles. It had to do with an early Western kind of a Dharma teacher named Paul Reps. He wrote this book, Zen Flesh, Zen Bones. It's a collection, it was done in 1939, a collection of wonderful little Zen stories that have been quite evocative for many people, and that probably introduced many people to Zen in the 50s and 60s. And there's many versions of this story. I'm sure it has some a basis in truth, but exactly what the version that's accurate, I don't know. But it has to do with Paul Reps going to the consulate in Japan in 1950s during the Korean War to get a visa. Apparently a visa to be able to stay in Japan for another year. And he was told that there was problems getting a visa. He had to either wait a long time, or it could be that he couldn't get one because of the Korean War. That was a difficult time for East Asia. But he was given the application, but you're not going to hear back anytime soon. It'll be a month or months or something. But he needed the visa. So he filled out the application, and he sat there in the kind of waiting room, and maybe apparently he had a thermos with him, and he had some green tea. And then he handed back the application, but with a note on it. And the note said, "Drinking a cup of green tea, I stop the war." And it was, like, I think, a haiku, which he knew Japanese. He wrote in Japanese, and maybe a haiku. And haiku is kind of, mean a lot in Japan. So he handed the application back for the visa with that poem. And the person looked at it and said, "Okay, come back tomorrow." And the next day he got the visa. And this is a little saying that I've heard quoted recently, with people saying, "Drinking this cup of tea, I stop the war." Do you really stop the war with drinking a cup of tea? Isn't this ridiculous to say that? Isn't it somehow diminishing the horror of what's happening in your comfort of your own kind of life, drinking a nice cup of tea and saying that I stop the war? How could that, what is this? What's going on? So partly this talk will be a kind of exploration of this very topic. So action, this has to do with what we do with our bodies, the activities of our bodies, activities of speech, what we say. And also in Buddhism, it's what we think. And all these are consequential. They have meaning, and they can be done in different ways. We can act in ways that are stressful, and we can act in ways that are peaceful, that are non-stressful, calm. We can act in ways that express anger and hostility or greed, and we can act in ways that express our generosity and our love and our care. And this can be done in as the medium or the way in which we do things. And so we learn through practice to pay attention to how we do things. So something as simple as sweeping the kitchen floor, if it's one more thing in a long list of things that have to be done for the day, one more thing that interferes with being anxious about tomorrow and whatever's going on, sweeping the kitchen floor might seem like just something to get over quickly and finish and just grab the broom really tight and just, you know, speed through it and don't worry about the corners. No one sees it anyway. And just get it over with. And then when it's over, if you paid attention, that person might notice that it was actually kind of tiring. It was a little bit stressful to do it because the tension and the hurry and one more thing. But you might not notice it because that was stressful because you have one more thing to do and you're already on to the next thing or four things later. And you're so distracted by your distractions, you don't notice the impact of how you do things is. But if you start being mindful, you might discover that there are different ways of sweeping the kitchen floor. You might do it in a way that's stressful. It adds the stress of the day, continues the stress of the day. There might be resistance. There might be resentment. Why do I have to clean the floor? And the resentment is stressful. There might be conceit. Look at me. I hope everyone notices that I'm the best kitchen floor sweeper in the world. And they better know it, you know. And so there's no, you know, figuring out ways. Maybe put a camcorder, a camera in your video camera in your kitchen so you can kind of broadcast it on YouTube so people can see how good you are. And it's like all this kind of strategies and things about self, it's stressful. Or you could do the sweep the floor and just sweep the floor in a simple, direct, peaceful way so that the only thing that you're really doing at that moment is physically sweeping the floor, engaged in it wholeheartedly. Maybe that's what your thoughts are about. Your thoughts are organized and in harmony so that they're actually involved with that too, as opposed to being someplace else. And so you start to gather yourself around the sweeping, and you discover that there's ways of doing it, gripping the broom, your posture, the speed in which you do it. There's ways of doing it that feel just lovely to do, feel harmonious, feel peaceful, and there are ways to do it that adds a little stress in how you do it, how you grip the broom and how quick you do it and all kinds of things. Maybe there's resistance, those corners. You know, you can feel as you get close to the corners, there's just like pulling back and navigating and negotiating and bargaining and like, okay, I don't have to do everything. And it just doesn't feel peaceful. It doesn't feel nice. And so as we kind of notice the impact of how we do things is on ourselves, we might learn there is a peaceful way of doing it so that at the end of doing it, we actually feel more settled, more calm, more present than we were before. It feels good. And we learn that how we do things, not just what we do, but how we do things is actually consequential. And so when people say, you know, Buddhism is about action, some people get exhausted just hearing it. Like, one more thing to do, you know, give me a break. I thought Buddhism was about just being. And, you know, I just sit down to meditate and just kind of like, finally, I don't have to be racing around doing things. I can just be in it. Buddhism gives me permission just to be. But that's not what Buddhism is really at the heart about. But maybe it's closer to this idea of how learning how to do. So in the doing, we enter a kind of harmony or peacefulness or non-conflict or non-stressfulness. So the very doing we do is nourishing, is supportive, creates a kind of a beautiful environment internally for ourselves, physically, mentally, emotionally. So how we do things. So how do we learn this? For some of us, certainly for me, one of the primary ways of having learned something like this had to do through meditation, where it looks like you're doing nothing, sitting there still, but sitting in a good meditative posture is a kind of doing, is an activity, is an action itself. And then, well, I'm not doing anything, I'm just being present. But being mindful is an activity of the mind. We're acting. As we start paying attention, noticing how it is and what happens to us as we meditate, as we get more settled and calm and we see more, one other thing, it isn't just about becoming calm. What's more important than becoming calm is beginning to discover and track the different ways we are in meditation. To notice when we are, for example, calm and when we're agitated or where we are in that spectrum. And begin feeling, well, being agitated is kind of stressful. Being calm is better. So maybe by accident you find yourself calm in meditation one day. And you're very familiar with your agitation that comes out of thinking about certain things. And so you start noticing yourself starting to think about those things and leaving the calm. And at some point in practice, as the practice matures, you get to the situation where you see that transition happening and you're able to say, no, thank you. Because you see that you're better off being calm than being agitated, starting to stress out. It's clearly, it's better that way. As we settle in and become more present with mindfulness and mindfulness, at some point, mindfulness is just staying in the present moment with present moment experience. And we start seeing that the mind leaves to start thinking about something else. Maybe something really important. Maybe the war in Ukraine from your meditation spot in California. And you can feel as you do that, that you're getting angry. And then becomes, you say, well, is this really, am I better off being angry or am I better off being present with mindfully with what's happening here? Where am I taking up residency? Am I taking up residency in the anger or residency in my peaceful state of mindfulness, just being mindful? At some point, we begin to discover that mindfulness and presence, peacefulness, calm, but especially mindfulness, is one of the best alternatives going. If someone asked me, you know, when should I be mindful? I would respond, when it's the best alternative available. And what I know is that as people become, mindfulness gets stronger, it's really clear that staying mindful is the better alternative to any state of being non-mindful. Because the tendency when not mindful is a stressful state. To be distracted, caught up in thoughts, preoccupied, is not really a healthy state to be in. And so we start seeing that we have mental actions that we have some choice over. We have a choice about whether to stay with the action of being mindful or going along with the actions of being stressful, being agitated, being worried, being anxious, being angry, being greedy and wanting. And it's fascinating to watch the impact different states of mind, different trains of thought have on us, to see and feel it physically, emotionally, psychologically, mentally, that some activities of the mind are clearly kind of not so beneficial for us. They're maybe stressful or even harmful. They perpetuate harmful ways of being and habits of being. And that there are other ways that are clearly beneficial, that clearly bring sense of harmony, peacefulness, subtleness, that helps us be connected to the best parts of who we are rather than disconnected from it. But then the lawyers of the mind come into play. And so one of the lawyers will say, you're not being responsible for the world situation unless you get angry. Or how can you take care of yourself without being greedy for the next thing or wanting something? You're supposed to want things. I mean, that's what all the advertisements have been telling us. Some of them say you deserve. So I'm supposed to go off there. And so in one way or the other, some of us will have very strong ideas, beliefs, that we're supposed to be, or it's good to be, angry, anxious, greedy, conceited with what we do. I deserve it. You know, it's all of me. I'm, you know, it's about, of course I'm supposed to be the best kitchen sweeper on my block. And I've been like, you know, it's, I have to make sure people know that. Because if they don't know that, then how will I get my just desserts about if people don't know how important I am as a sweeper? So we have to contend with these lawyers, these beliefs we have, but the beliefs we have, which are subtle, sometimes subconscious, can become known, and it's possible to recognize the impact those beliefs, just having those beliefs have on us. Chances are those beliefs are not just kind of floating through peacefully like gentle cloud and empty sky and just kind of like, you know, coming and going, they're a dime a dozen, no problem. They come with a force. They come with a grip. They come with an insistence that's kind of stressful. If we're having some choice about the actions we engage in, do we have a choice about whether to go along with those beliefs, allow them to take over, allow them to influence us, participate in them, or do we have the choice to be mindful that they're happening? Look at that. There's a belief. Wow. It's just another cloud. It's just a dark one. But it's just a belief. But I'm mindful of believing. And then seeing what the impact is of that mindfulness. And learning how to be mindful so the mindfulness itself doesn't add to the stress. The mindfulness itself adds to a kind of peacefulness, a kind of something that feels nourishing and pleasant. Sometimes the Buddhist tradition talks about states of mind that are beautiful. So it creates beauty inside. But isn't that self-indulgent? Well, the alternative is worse. The alternative of being caught up in these things and preoccupied and listening to the lawyers that say that you have to be a certain way and you have to be anxious and upset and angry, or you have to let people know about, you know, how right you are, and all kinds of things. Why sacrifice your peace? Why sacrifice the best alternative available? So as we sit and meditate, part of the advantage is we start learning, have a reference point for a healthier and healthier way of being in the world. And at some point realize it's the best alternative going. Why diminish yourself, undermine yourself in the old habits maybe of how you usually be? It's a navigation for many people, negotiation, or kind of to discover that it's okay to have an inner life that's peaceful. Sometimes our society doesn't appreciate it. You're supposed to be worried. If you're not worrying, you don't love me. If you're supposed to be angry, if you're not angry, then you're not really concerned with justice. the more angry you are, the more you're proving yourself interested in, you know, justice in the world. The more angry you are about what's going on, the more you're showing that you're one of the people who is believing the right things or doing the right things. So there's all these reasons why people feel like they're supposed to be angry, or it's not okay to be peaceful and present. But as we start learning this new reference point through something like meditation or mindfulness, that new reference point becomes a teacher for us and shows us what is healthy to do and what is not healthy to do. And then we keep choosing, in Buddhism, we keep choosing a healthy alternative. And then this teachings of action that the Buddha has is sometimes encapsulated in four kinds of action. That there's four ways of acting. Everything can fit into these four categories. So it makes action simple. It's more has to do with how you do things than what you do. But it can be what you do too. And they're summarized like four words, a little bit my own version of these four. It's to prevent, to stop, to start, and to protect. Prevent, stop, start, protect. So the first is prevention. An ounce of prevention is better than anything else. So live a life that prevents, sets up the conditions so that you avoid getting caught up in states of mind, habits, thoughts, activities, which are unhealthy for you, detrimental. As we have stronger and stronger reference point of peace within, it becomes more and more subtle, understanding how to prevent. So if we are living stressfully, it's very easy to not pay enough attention and have old habits take over. One way to prevent getting lost in unhealthy states of mind and unhealthy activities is to stay calm. Don't allow yourself to get stressed out. Easier said than done, but that's the game. That's what we're trying to do here. To prevent, maybe there's things you should avoid doing entirely. Maybe you should avoid drinking alcohol. It seems innocent enough. I can do it. No problems. But it turns out that whenever you drink alcohol, the next day, you're not quite up to your usual self, to your full self, or in a good way. And you tend to say things you later regret because you get more casual or you're kind of tired or something. And so there's a lot of things we can pay attention to. What can we do to make it less likely we succumb to some of these unhealthy tendencies? So, for example, one of the great preventive moves, activities for meditators is to meditate. To have the kind of presence of mind, the attention, the calm that comes from meditation sometimes has a lingering effect through the day if you meditate in the morning. And maybe you're less likely to get stressed out or get caught in preoccupations or less likely to do something mindlessly, or you're more in a frame of heart, where you're connected to what's the best in you. So meditation is a preventative. You know, just like brushing your teeth every day, meditate every day, just as a good preventive mechanism from getting cavities, mental cavities, mind cavities. So prevention. The second is to prevent yourself, from getting involved with things which are unhealthy for you in body, speech, and mind. The second is to stop. And learning to stop is fantastic. What it means here is if you find yourself doing something which is unhealthy, stop. If you have a train of thought which is not going anywhere useful, it's actually going some detrimental way, learn the capacity, a healthy capacity, to stop doing it, to avoid it, to drop it, to let go of it, but to stop. But, you know, it's my mind. It's just what it's doing, and that's repression if I stop it, or that's kind of like not allowing things to be, or that means that I, you know, I deserve, I'm supposed to think that way, and I'm supposed to include all of who I am, and what's this Buddhism that says I can't do this kind of stuff? Yeah, I mean, if you argue like that, I just probably just get quiet. But it'd be kind of like saying that, when I have a cut in my finger, I should still be able to do whatever I do and, you know, put my hands into the compost pile and clean the sewer and not have to worry about anything, you know, putting a Band-Aid over it or keeping it clean or putting a glove on when I do those activities. You know, that just seems like I'm being limited, and I want to just be myself fully, and I happen to have this cut on my hand, and I just want to, you know, okay, well, if you say that, you know, maybe I'll take you to the emergency when your hand gets infected. Let me know. So to start learning how to stop, but the stopping itself, to do it in a peaceful way. The stopping itself is an activity. So how do you do that activity so that it supports the best in you? So it supports harmony, beauty, peacefulness, calm. If you, there's an expression, whack-a-mole, that's applied to meditation, and which is kind of like every time something like a thought arises or some kind of negative thought arises, kind of like to hit it over the head to knock it down, you know, knock it down. Like, kind of this angry, aggressive form of mindfulness. And when I was a new meditator, I sometimes imagined I was playing pinball machine. You know, it's like, knock that thought out of the way. But how to stop in a way that feels peaceful and not repressive, not angry, not attacking anything, just kind of like, it's enough. No, thank you. I don't have to do that anymore. And how does mindfulness, a clear recognition of what's happening, how is that a kind of a stopping? And it's a kind of a stopping if your life energy goes into the mindfulness. So it's not so much available to continue trains of thoughts and ideas and motivations that don't serve you. Stop. So the third is to start. There are things you can do which are healthy, that are beneficial, supportive. You could start your mindfulness practice. You can start kindness. You can start generosity. You can start looking more closely what's going on here, investigate. Sometimes you can start joy. You can start calmness. You can kind of take a deep breath and relax and relax your body. You can take a couple of moments you know, to take a little walk. Maybe just 20 paces enough to get a little more settled and calm and connected. Start means to get involved and start doing the things that you've learned are supportive and helpful. There too, how you do it is important. If you're desperately doing it, holding on for dear life, maybe that's not the most conducive to being, you know, get the best out of it. If you're doing it in a greedy way, you know, like, I'm going to get these really good states of mind, and that's what I want to have. And then I can go be the best meditator on my block, and I'm going to let everyone know. Or you can do it as a way of avoiding. It can be actually be a form of anger or aversion, hostility. I'm going to get rid of that bad states of mind, but getting those good states of mind here and overcoming it. Those are all actions of the mind. Always in Buddhism, we're looking at the actions of the mind, the actions of mind, body, and speech. We're looking at those actions and evaluating them. Is the way that I do anything, the way that I respond to anything, happening in the moment or any time. Is the way I'm responding beneficial or not beneficial? And then we have the fourth one, which is protect. Some things are worth protecting. Some states of mind, some ways of being, some activities of mind, they're worth protecting. If you finally, after a lifetime of being anxious, you're finally calm or settled or at rest, then it's maybe that's good to protect. But how do you protect it? Not by resistance, not by stressfully holding everything at bay, but maybe valuing it, taking time for it, not rushing off to all the other next things we could do so we forget about it. Protect what's good. Protect what's coming along. The beauty, all of you have tremendous potential for inner beauty. All kinds of ways in which there's something really a treasure inside of you. As you get hints of it and sense of it through practice or other ways, it's worth protecting. Protecting it is another action. The question is, how do you do that action so it is beneficial, it's healthy, it brings harmony to the situation? Well, you protect it by preventing unhealthy ways of protecting, stopping unhealthy ways of protecting, initiating healthy ways of protecting, and then protecting yourself from that, doing that. So there's always a self-referencing back. And as practice deepens and deepens and matures for people, there's a stronger and stronger and stronger reference point of well-being, of ease, of peace, of happiness, that gives us a clear and clear understanding of how valuable these four efforts are, these four actions are. Preventing, stopping, starting, and protecting. As we go along with this, then when we encounter the world and all the horrible and beautiful things that can happen in the world, that reference point is available. So if we encounter the horrific war in Ukraine, why sacrifice your own inner well-being at that in relationship to the war? Why sacrifice your peace, your harmony, so that you can be angry, so that you can be distressed, so that you can be afraid? You know, so all these things we do, that we, in choosing to do those, and we do choose, this is the kind of the challenge of Buddhism. We don't necessarily see the choice being done, but we choose. Why choose these stressful ways of being? Why not stay with our peace? One of the reasons people choose to let go of their peace is they feel like then they won't be able to be responsibly involved in making a difference in the world. For those of us here in California, is your being angry, your being despairing, going to help anything? Why give into despair when you're sitting quietly and you see that moving into despair is a choice? It comes with beliefs that are evoking the despair. Why give into it? And this teaching I'm giving here, I think, is most suitable for people who do something like mindfulness meditation and who really be able to settle and see there's this choice, there's a reference point for some kind of place of being. It's okay. And in fact, not only is it okay, the world needs people who know how not to give in to despair, how not to give in to anger, how not to give in to fear, how not to give in to greed. Because if there's going to be any chance for world peace, it has to come out of that. That somehow world peace is the greatest, wonderful goal that is, begins with each of you. It can't begin for you, it can't begin anywhere else. It can't begin anywhere else. If you want to do something for the Ukraine, stop the war in your heart. Find peace. Be that way. Does that mean that you ignore what's happening in Ukraine? No. My trust is that if you find the healthy, peaceful freedom that's within, the heart will respond as is appropriate. And there are many ways of responding, some very local, some indirect, some direct. It all depends on our circumstances. But Buddhism is about action. So how will you act? Don't be a couch potato. That's not a healthy action. How do you act so that the very acting, responding, feels nourishing and beneficial for you? How do you maybe change your lifestyle? Like, I can imagine there's going to be a call for us to change our lifestyle, because it seems to me that it's pretty beneficial for the world, for those of us all over the world, but in this country, to consume less gasoline. For all kinds of reasons, it would be beneficial. But this is a sacrilegious idea in the United States. It's a way of getting voted out of office, if you say it. But how to do that, the change how we live and live in a way that contributes to the world rather than detracts from it, how do we do it so we feel nourished, inspired, gladdened by the very doing? That's the art of this. Not so that we feel diminished. We actually feel enhanced. We feel more beautiful. We feel more happy. How do we make a donation to save the children? Not because, you know, Gil's expecting it of us. And, you know, then it's kind of going to be diminishing. That kind of undermines you with that kind of motivation. But is there a motivation that comes out of a settled, peaceful place that's inspired, that makes you sing? This is great to do that. It's tragic, it's heartbreaking what's happening in Ukraine, but here is a beautiful activity that I can participate in. It feels good to do this. And then my hope is that as we learn how to stop the war, drinking a cup of tea, sweeping the floor, talking to our neighbors, whatever we're doing, that we'll set up the conditions that when what we have to offer the world to save the world comes in front of us, we'll act accordingly. That when we understand what's needed, when we understand the situation and what we have to offer, that we will be people who contribute to a better world. Not just because we're peaceful, but because that peaceful place is empowering action, empowering engagement in a way that's appropriate for each of us in our own way, so that engagement is beneficial for us, not harmful to us. It enhances us, doesn't add to our stress and our burdens and diminishes us. The Buddha taught action, was a teacher of action. And how do we act in such a way that the heart can live in this world actively, fully participating in this world. So the heart is at peace. So the heart of the heart, is sweetly still, sweetly unagitated, unmoving. And here is where Buddhism emphasizes not doing. The place where the heart is sweetly not doing, peaceful, still, while we act and speak and think in beneficial ways for ourselves and for our whole world. May this practice that we do give us the inner reference point of peace, of stillness, non-agitation, that allows the best of us to come forth into the world. That's for our own benefit and the benefit of the whole world. May this practice help us be peacemakers for this world. Thank you.